This is KWAI, Honolulu, 1080 on the AM dial.
Sail on, my little honeybee, sail on. You're gonna keep on sailing till you lose your happy home. Sail on, my little honeybee, sail on. I don't mind you sailing, but please don't sail so long. All right, little honeybee. I hear a lot of buzzing, sound like my little honeybee. She been all around the world making honey, but now she is coming back home to me.
It's time for the Carol Cox Show right here at K108. If you have questions or comments for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080. And now, here's Carol. The following program is brought to you by Carol Cox. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of KWAI staff and management.
Hey, good morning. Welcome to the Carol Cox Show. Lovely day here, just absolutely beautiful, sunny and overcast on the mountains, and you should all to be here. Anyway, today I have I consider now a friend, Mr. Howard McGinnis, and Howard is as we know him as the Bee Man, and he is has a company in case you want some honey, Nalo Meli is the name of the company. www.nalo-meli.com. And for those of you out there that want to follow the plight of the bees, and the reason we're talking bees is that we'll get into it, is that this is pretty much the season, the time of the year that's known as a swarming season, or we see a great frequency in swarming. And Howard last week went to one site that was in Mauna Loa after a couple of city workers lifting trash and bulky items along the road were stung by bees that had left their original hive and established a hive in a sofa sitting on the side of the road. So that, imagine the pedestrians and what have you. And anyway, so Howard went over there at my call and asking for assistance, and we'll tell you about that. But if you have any questions or anything or interested in following the plight of the bees, you know, there's so many reasons we suspect that we attribute to the decline in the bees, which some of you may not know that there was a decline or is a decline, and could be the Vora mite or the hive beetle or spraying, GMOs is suspected. So we're going to get into all of that. And if you like to also, if you're having difficulty or want others to listen, tune in at KWAI 1080, 1080 AM. Hit the live button and you can get this anywhere in the world and get on the internet. So, Howard, thank you for coming in and sharing with us. How's it going? How bees it?
It's going good. Actually, it should be me thanking you for having me on your show. I think this is, what, our third, almost third annual swarm.
Yeah.
Which one of the great things is the fact that you do, you've almost adopted bees as I'm not quite sure what the word is, but you're more in tune with bees than a lot of people are.
Yeah.
And this this opportunity to talk about bees, to talk about the plight of bees,
mm-hmm.
to talk about what's going on this time of year, what people should do,
mm-hmm.
Is really important. I think a lot of people are scared. I think the couch in Mauna Loa could have been handled differently had people known exactly what to do.
Right.
I appreciate the call to go take, you know, to take a look at it, because it did give us some, you know, on-air coverage,
mm-hmm.
of sort of the bewildered look that we had with, well, what am I supposed to do?
Right.
They're sprayed. I can't use them. You know, and it's a sad thing.
Mm-hmm.
You're right about this is swarm season. Where swarm season before 2007 used to be generally March and August. Now it starts late January, and it'll run all the way up into December. And winter, our peak times now, we're getting about a call a day,
mm-hmm.
from people, either with swarms or where the bees have swarmed inside their houses. Swarming is a natural thing that bees do. It's because the hive that they're in is full. There's no more room for the queen to lay eggs. There's no more room for the bees to build comb, to store honey. They've basically completed a mission, which is to fill that hive
space
up.
That space.
And when that occurs, this it triggers an instinct of swarming. And this is how the species survives, reproduces. Half the bees will leave, along with the old queen,
mm-hmm.
and will go and start a new colony somewhere. So one day, you might be walking down and you'll hear a big roar, and you look up in the sky and it'll just be black with insects, and
mm-hmm.
you won't know what it is until they pass by, and my gosh, it's bees. It's a huge
mm-hmm.
swarm of bees, and give them a few minutes and sometimes they'll just pass on through. Sometimes they'll collect on a branch.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a wonder of nature. I get a little smile inside whenever I see a swarm. It's a lot of fun for me to catch. I'm very good at it. The swarms are real important for us here in Hawaii, because unlike the mainland, if I was running low on bees, I could pick up the phone, I could call somebody,
mm-hmm.
and say, I need bees, I need packages of bees. And they would go, okay, how many? And they would box up some bees and send them to me, motor freight.
Right.
With a package being about 9,000 bees and a queen, and it would be a done deal. Hawaii is different. We have no one doing package bees. We also have laws that prohibit us from importing bees into the state. So a swarm is real important, because this is one of the ways that we get new hives.
Mm-hmm.
swarms have a very good survival instinct. They're programmed to build a hive as fast as possible so the mm-hmm. queen can lay eggs. A lot of people don't realize that a swarm has a mission to establish a home someplace mm-hmm. and get the business of making comb so the queen can lay eggs. The worker bees have a really short life, 42 days. And every day that goes by, the swarm is going to lose bees. It takes 21 days from the time the queen lays an egg to that bee emerges. So you can see there's a window. This is why they're basically not interested in bothering us. The couch, because the couch was picked up, and I'm not quite sure of what the history of the couch was, mm-hmm. The hive gets disturbed, and this is why it stings. Had people saw the bees and left them alone and called, and one of the things that I try to get across is to call anybody. You can call 911. You can call HPD. You can call HFD, the fire department. You can call the vector control, state vector control. There's a pest hotline. You can call the University of Hawaii. You can call a pest control company. Mm-hmm. A lot of pest control companies will give you the number of a beekeeper. So there's a lot of ways that you can get in touch with us. Mm-hmm. If somebody would have called us, we could have been out there in a relatively short period of time. We could have removed the hive from the couch, brought them out to a farm where they would be productive, and at little risk to the public, we get some bees. The public gets rid of a problem. The bulky items, people can remove the mm-hmm. the couch without any problem.
Now, there's two things here. The this colony or this hive was originally discovered by the bulky item, city bulky item pickup. And they, in turn, once they picked the item up, the sofa up, put it in the back of the truck or attempted to, the bees obviously got disturbed and they start to process the bulky item. And I'm told a number of the guys got stung 5 or 6 times because the bees are reacting to an aggressive behavior. They don't know what's going on and they're there protecting themselves. That's what some of the hive does, right? They do that.
They
go on the attack.
The hive in the in the couch had been established for a little while. It had been in there long enough to build some comb. Mm-hmm. And once they do that, that's their home. So when their house is disturbed, this is the natural reaction, is they sting to ward off, call them evildoers, or you know, things that would be threatening their house. Mm-hmm. A lot of times bees will telegraph their intentions. They'll let you know if you walk up to a hive and they're disturbed by you. They'll buzz you. Mm-hmm. Stinging is a last resort for them. The unfortunate thing is that when a bee stings, as it leaves behind the stinger and the venom sac, it also leaves behind an alarm pheromone gland. And that gland marks you. So you become a target. The bees know who to go with after without having to look.
Who's the aggressor?
Right. And that just causes more bees, you know, to come after you. Again, had the bulky item people noticed the bees in there and not attempted to move it, called their city and county has some people that are equipped to deal with bees, mm-hmm. and those people also know beekeepers as well. So we'll get a call from city and county, you know, come and take care of this.
Two important things that I noticed, and where this was placed, it was right at the corner, and anyone trying to avoid or walking by it would find themselves in the traffic on the Moanalua road. So that was dangerous. That presented a health hazard or a risk, physical hazard. The other thing is, don't spray them. If whatever you do, just back off and call someone, because you're not doing any good. You're never going to spray the whole hive anyway. And this situation here resulted in someone came along and had the great answer was to take some Raid and spray, and even after spraying for some extended period of time, the bees were still there. So why shouldn't a person not spray?
We recommend that people don't spray. And the reason is that you're dealing with anywhere from, say, 7 to 40,000 stinging insects. You may think you're handy with a can of Raid, but you don't really know what you're up against. You don't know the extent of the hive. I find typically that where people have sprayed, they've taken a manageable problem and they've turned it into a nightmare.
Mm-hmm.
I'll show up at a place and I'll find bees all over. Instead of being in a cluster, you know, they'll be on leaves, they'll be on cars, they'll be on garbage cans, they'll be flying around, and I'm just at a loss as to what to do. There's no way for me to get them to come back together again. Occasionally, I may have a queen in my pocket, and that may attract them. But when they spray, the bees are going to scatter, and you're actually creating a public nuisance, mm-hmm. a hazard when you do spray. The couch was an interesting thing because there's no housing around there. So how did a couch end up there? There's no house for somebody to haul it off on. If people would have called, mm-hmm. we would have picked the couch up very delicately. We would have assessed the situation. We would have relocated the bees, mm-hmm. And the problem would have been solved. When the people spray them, not only do they create the hazard, because now the bees are going to be all over the place, whereas before you might have been able to walk past that, mm-hmm. and not getting stung.
Mm-hmm.
But once the bees have been sprayed, they lose that that hive mentality. They're all over the place. They're confused. And it does present, mm-hmm. you know, a problem there.
Now, if you could, two things I'd like to ask you to share with us is the process when we call you. And by the way, the phone number to get in touch with Howard is 258-7296. Is there a charge if a homeowner or someone see a colony or hive establishing or setting up somewhere and they want it removed? Is there a cost, and if so, and how much, or what's the difference and what dictates the cost? And how do they get in touch with you? I know it's 258-7296, but how could you explain that for us?
Well, first of all, my practice is that for hanging swarms, for swarms that are accessible that I can get, I don't charge.
Mm-hmm.
I don't charge, you know, for driving out. I don't charge if I go out and find that they've swarmed off, they've flown, you know, they've left where they were at.
Mm-hmm.
Because for me, it's bees. I'm getting something out of it. There are some other people that will, you know, ask a small charge to cover gas.
Mm-hmm.
It's sometimes demoralizing to drive, you know, 20, 30 miles through our wonderful traffic and road construction to get there and then find out that either the bees have left, or often what happens is people get panicky and they'll call everybody. So we all converge on the same spot.
Mm-hmm. So you got a gathering of more beekeepers than bees.
Yes, and then we start the process of negotiating who gets them, because we've all driven out. And,
I think the definition of that scenario is called a sticky mess.
Yes, and it happens quite often.
Really, because everyone gets on the phone and go, I got a bee, I got a problem, and they're nervous,
right?
And frenzy, and so all of you show up.
Right. One of the things that I found over the 10 years that I've been doing this is that a lot of times people call, and really what they want is they want reassurance. They want a calm voice on the other end of that phone that says, it's all right. This is a natural thing. These are not going to come after you. They're not going to attack you in the case mm-hmm. of a hanging swarm. people want assurance, and, mm-hmm. and they're looking to a professional to give them that assurance. And sometimes we fail in that. Not necessarily me, but there are people who will don't give that reassurance to the person calling. And so this is what I tell them. This is a naturally occurring thing. A swarm is naturally occurring. The bees do not want to sting you. Mm-hmm. They just want to find a place to make a new home. And as long as you leave them alone, which is true for most, you know, wild animals and mm-hmm. things, you leave them alone, usually they'll leave you alone.
Yeah.
But that's really step one when somebody calls me, is to let them know that that everything's okay. This isn't the end of the world. And the second thing is that I'll be on my way.
Mm-hmm.
I will drop everything to come and get a hanging swarm. It's fun for me. It's an opportunity to increase my workforce. And we're still losing bees here in Hawaii, so it's an opportunity for me to make up for the loss of one that may succumb to varroa.
So generally, a hive that is on the move is a healthy hive. Can that be, is that an accurate statement?
Yes, because it originates from a hive that just got too big. So the hive that they came from had quite a few, bees. They have no more room. They have a queen who's laying up a storm. So this is a swarm is a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's a sign of a healthy hive
mm-hmm.
someplace, usually within two-thirds of a mile.
So when you find this hive and you arrive, can you explain? Now, someone asked me, what do they do? Do they take a vacuum cleaner and just suck the bees up? And you got to be careful and not say to someone, no, silly. It renders the bees nothing. It would be the equivalent of spraying them with a pesticide or disturbing any, trying to kill them off. So what do? You arrive with a container and you sit it down by the box. I've watched you. What is that process and how does it work?
First of all, the vacuum I call Mr. Toad's Wild Ride because unless you're using a smooth hose, that corrugated hose is just, the bees are going to be all busted up. The vacuum cleaner for me is the last resort. And it's not a normal vacuum cleaner. It's a special one with a collection box.
Mm-hmm.
We can adjust the
suction.
The suction.
Mm-hmm.
Bees have a remarkable grip. I've had bees hanging on my window at 60 miles an hour. Their little legs are quite capable of gathering or grabbing onto something. Every swarm is different. I could say in three types that I run into is the one that's hanging on a branch on a tree. And in that case, I come up with my small box. I'll put it right below the bees. I'll grab the branch, cut it, drop it in the box, put the lid on it, strap it up, take it away.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe 10 minutes.
Okay.
It could be a swarm on the ground. In that case, what I'll do is I'll put a box down. I believe in letting the bees do the work.
Mm-hmm.
The boxes that we bring usually have had bees in them before, so it has a honey and wax smell. The bees are familiar with, they're comfortable with. It's dark inside. This is exactly what they're looking for. The alternative is between the sheetrock and the siding of your double wall house.
Mm-hmm.
So we're really bringing them something that's much better, and they recognize it. So I'll set the box down. A lot of times the bees will just march in on their own. It's sort of like watching National Geographic.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like magic, but it's not. It's really just knowing what they want. Sometimes I have to give them a little helping hand, and I have a paper cup that I carry in the car, a large soft drink cup. And I'll scoop up bees and dump them in the box. When I get enough bees in there, they'll produce a follow-me smell. They'll
mm-hmm.
blow out of the hive, and all the bees will march in.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it looks like magic, but it's just knowing how it
goes. Kind of like us when we put on Aramis or some cologne, how we want the bees, the honey, to
it doesn't seem to work for me. I mean, they go the other way. So I must not be using the right pheromones. The other method that I employ is sometimes they're way up in a tree where I don't have a ladder that can kind of get them. And I have tools that I've constructed out of mango pickers and buckets that allow me to basically reach about 28 feet up in a tree. And I'll put this bucket below them, give it a sharp push upward, get them to drop down, and then I lower it down and I dump them into a box. And again, they'll put out this smell, this follow me smell, and eventually the bees will all come down out of the tree and into my box. It's a lot of fun to watch. I have a lot of people who initially stay, you know, it seems like 100 miles back, but by the time I get them in the box, I'm basically having to tell them, you need to step back a little bit. You need to give these bees some room. And again, it's because they're working with a professional. They see that I can interact with these bees without getting stung. And my confidence, you know, with the bees rubs off on them. All of a sudden, they're confident. So that's basically the process for getting it.
Well, I'm speaking with Howard McGinnis, better known as the Bee Man, and we're talking about swarming bees and the proper way to handle them and the safe way. We know that some people are actually allergic to bees, and so don't take it lightly. If you find them swarming, someone can go into anaphylactic shock or whatever. So we don't want to take chances. But the key here is the Carol Cox Show say and ask you to let them stay, don't spray. So don't use pesticides, herbicides, or anything. Just let them be. Don't shoot them down with water. Leave it to a professional. And with the declining population of bees, we really need your help. So we're going to take a call here. Caller, good morning. You have a comment or question?
Good morning, Carol.
Yeah, good morning.
How are you?
I'm fine.
I like your guess.
All righty. He's a sweet guy.
Well, that's what bees are for, sweet and honey.
Yeah, not melly.
And the reason why I'm calling is because when I lived in Kona, the magic was get a queen.
Mm-hmm.
Get a 55-gallon drum with a small, you know, you, on a drum there's a big, there's the big
cap, the screw. Yeah, mm-hmm.
For the flow and the small cap for the air.
Mm-hmm.
You plug up the big cap and you keep the small cap and you make sure the bees go in the drum because, like that gentleman said, they like the dark.
Mm-hmm.
And my father-in-law, who was a beekeeper, that's what he taught me. So, just like if you got a rat problem at home, what do you get? You get a cat.
Mm-hmm.
You got a bee problem. You get a queen.
Mm-hmm.
And before you know it, they're he's right. He's absolutely right. They have a tendency of smell, and that smell of honey will draw. And then, like he said, your people that are afraid of the bees that's making the call stand far away, but when the beekeeper comes and he shows the people the confidence that you can get up next to the bee,
mm-hmm.
of getting stung, they move in a little bit more, and then they become in the way.
Oh, yeah, and they're right there moving the bees around with their fingers. I saw it the other day.
And the thing is, they want to try it. They want to try it so that I don't have to call the beekeeper anymore.
Because it's amazing just to see this. It's an insect.
But yes.
To see it operate and see how it functions in the social structure, and clearly there's some social structure or something that's innate with them, but to see how they function. And the key is, I found too, don't wave your hands and get frantic, because if you can walk there and just mind your business, I've not been stung yet, except for one time doing an interview in the Waipahu. A bee came out of the hole and just hit me right on the lips, and my lips blossomed. I mean,
oh my God.
And I thought, well, it's not the bee's fault. Maybe he didn't like what I was saying.
It's always a she that stinks.
It's a she that stinks. Yes. Well, she did not like the
word. But you know, Carol, the circumstances differ. Wherever you're located, they differ.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever seen the bee dance?
Yeah.
You've seen them dance in circles?
I've seen them do all of that.
Yeah. There's that unreal ceremony that they do, and before you know it, somebody's following the leader.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. So thank you for your guests, because it reminds me of my time in Kona. There were bee boxes all over the place.
Yeah, and they've declined. So anyway, well, thank you, Uncle Joe.
One more thing. Uh-huh. I didn't bring it to the table, like I said I did. So we got to get you online one day and address.
Oh, you mean the matter of the assault and all?
Yeah. We know what we...
Well, take the DHHL message and the governor. None of this assault nonsense would have occurred if they'd have done a damn job up front.
Absolutely.
If they were just operating like a democratic, clean government, I wouldn't have to be out there poking my nose
and trying to clean up the mess.
Clean up their crap. So let's establish that first and so I got whacked and they stand back, and that's been the problem. It's I hope for the sake of the Hawaiian beneficiaries that we get past this.
This is what I started off with.
Yeah.
Do we wait for another funeral?
Well, no. we don't wait.
Oh, no, listen now. Listen well.
Mm-hmm.
Looked at me like, what are you talking about, a funeral? People have died on the line waiting.
Yeah,
that's the funerals I've been talking about. However, do we wait for another funeral, whether it be dying on the line or whether it be whacking from a pipe?
Well, I again still hold the governor and Hawaiian Homelands and the state government responsible, because there's no way any government agency should be operating the way the Hawaiian Homelands operate, period. And so when a citizen is attacked in daylight, and I'd already filed these complaints with them, and they still took no legal action, no action at all, dragged their feet. It's a game. They're defrauding the Hawaiian people. I'm okay with getting hit over the head. I'm still here. Let me just say to you, it's a greater atrocity. My pain is instant. Oh, and by the way, folks, you don't see any white lights. You don't see any tunnels, and nobody come along and say, give you a hand. It lights out, okay? But the reality is, when you spring back to life and you see nothing has changed and it's the same old crap and nobody speaks out, there should have been an immediate action taken on the part of Joby Masagatani and all those other bourgeois folks that walked in there. Something's wrong. And to date, I've yet to have a single phone call from anybody in DHHL to ask me about the contaminations on there, the land being used illegally, the drugs being grown and raised on the properties, and the stealing of containers and the stealing of trucks and cars and what have you. And what do they sit back? So I do appreciate the hundreds and hundreds of people that have actually called in, but my heart sits with the Hawaiian people. It's a shame, and if anybody can't bring themselves to the table and talk about and hold Hawaiian Homelands accountable, nothing will ever change. I don't care how you put it, fix it, until the governor and the attorney general understand that it's their responsibility to make sure that they, in a fiduciary responsibility, and be responsible to the people. Quit defrauding the Hawaiian people on this issue called Hawaiian Homeland.
Well, you know where I sit.
Yeah. Well, I thank you, but keep them talking about it, because
I will bring it to the table. I will constantly bring it to the table. I brought it to the executive session, and I was assured that it's going to be discussed. I don't know how long. I don't know when.
Well,
but I'm going to bring it. I'm going to continue to bring it until we put it on the table and we discuss it.
Well, yeah, and talk is cheap. I just need to see some people fired. And the governor making a public statement and apologizing to the Hawaiian people. I'm okay with it. I've been hit before and kicked before, but what's really sad is to sit by and watch this parade just go around in circles. So anyway, we're going to get back on bees and we're talking
about
power.
Thank you for your guest.
Aloha. Thank you. Caller, good morning. You have a comment, a question?
Yeah, just a quick comment. I'm glad you're getting back in the attack mode. It's interesting you're talking about the honeybees. I want you to talk about the wasps and the yellow jackets, and talking about the people like the Cabanillas and the Cacholas and the DHL. do they get back in the attack mode?
Well, this, you know, we got to sweeten them up, Ed. Once in a while, we got to sweeten. You know, you got to strike a balance and be, because they'll say, that guy Cox, he's always on the edge, you know, growling and snapping. So I kind of gravitate back to some of those feng shui moments. The bees make that happen, right? It's a balance. So anyway, thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Anyway, the bee population, we see a decline in it. That was not fear and overreaction on the part of environmentalists or farmers. This is reality, right?
It's an interesting topic. You know, we have the National Agricultural Statistic Survey or something that's done every year where farmers, including beekeepers, are required to enumerate how many hives they have and how much honey they produce. And they kind of fudge some of the numbers together so you can't really identify specific organizations. While there seems to be an indication that bees are in decline, the number of colonies that were actually reported for the last cycle is up 4 to 6%.
Wow.
So it brings... you know, bring some things to mind. One is media getting the numbers right, or are they, you know, relying on past statistics? Mm-hmm. Is it that NASS is getting better data? So it's not that there's a true increase in the number of colonies. It's just an increase in the number of colonies reported.
Mm-hmm.
Or do we have new beekeepers? Here in Hawaii, it seems like not a week goes by that somebody doesn't say, oh, I want to be a beekeeper. You know, can you sell me some bees? And so we're seeing, you know, more and more people getting interested in backyard beekeeping. I don't know how those numbers make it into NASS because they're really not a commercial operation. But this is something that's going around with the big guys, beekeepers, that we're having losses, but we're also having record almond crops, and bees are extremely important for almonds. So to get record almond crops, you'd have to have record pollinators.
Right.
And right now, the almonds take about two-thirds, or about 1.5 million colonies of bees, and they'll come from all over the United States. They'll truck them in. So... with a 4 to 6% increase, you know, in number of reported colonies, record almond crops.
Recent years
have been, you know, spectacular. So where's the disconnect? Where's the and yet we do read about, you know, massive pesticide die-offs. Some of them are just call it accidents, you know, people just not paying attention to what they're doing, you know, putting a lot of pesticides where they're not supposed to be. There was a report that just came out this year from Harvard saying that they had found the cause of colony collapse disorder. It was a poorly reviewed paper. And the only way they could get the bees to die were they were exposing them to 10 times the amount of pesticides that they would normally come in contact with. Some of the studies are getting better, but, you know, there's still... It seems to be a very popular topic to talk about, and I think gloom and doom sells. So let's say that the bees are on some massive, you know, die-off. That's what the people... you know, people will mobilize for. If we said that the bees were doing just fine, then nobody would care.
Right.
So it's an interesting thing. I don't know. I know my bees are declining. and they're declining here in Hawaii for two or three reasons. One is varroa mite.
Varroa mite.
Which showed up in 2007. The small hive beetle, which is a far worse enemy, which showed up in 2010. And I believe we're having issues with pesticides, fungicides, and herbicides. Misapplication, wrong times. If I can digress a little bit on the pesticides and mm-hmm. fungicides and herbicides. I believe Hawaii has probably always had a problem with pesticides, herbicides. I think the basic formulations change over time, but we still had pesticide die-offs. Mm-hmm. But we used to have massive hives. And if you kill 10,000 bees in a colony, really that's 5 to 10 days laying for the queen.
Right.
So in 6 weeks, the hive is really doesn't even see the effects of that. Mm-hmm. With the introduction of varroa, the hives just don't have the strength that they used to. With the introduction of the small hive beetle, you have an enemy that's just waiting for your numbers to drop.
Right.
So with varroa only, our hives were weak, and possibly a pesticide kill would drop the numbers down too low for the hive to survive, to sustain itself. When the small hive beetle comes in, and really the only defense we have against the small hive beetle is a strong hive. Mm-hmm. When the numbers weaken because of a pesticide, herbicide, or fungicide, you know, overspray, weakens the hive. Varroa is also weakening the hive. We don't have the numbers inside the hive to fend off these small hive beetles. And the small hive beetles get a chance to lay an egg. And I don't know if I've mentioned this before. Varroa is a slow death, maybe a year.
Zapping the energy and protein.
Right. It takes about a year for varroa to kill a hive off. And we as beekeepers can see that, and we can affect treatments for them. The small hive beetle, I've seen a small hive beetle take out a large hive in 4 days. And there is no way I can protect against that.
Mm-hmm.
If we harvest honey sometimes, the bees get distracted. The beetle takes over. Lays eggs, it's the larva that does the damage. Eats the hive up. 4 days.
When did the small hive beetle arrive on our shores in Hawaii? Or which island and when?
The small hive beetle was first detected in the Big Island in, I believe, April of 2010. Now, the key is that it was detected. But as you probably know, by the time you detect something, mm-hmm. it's too late. It's already going to be well entrenched. And I think we're finding that with things like this rhinoceros
beetle.
You know, it's like, oh, well, we found one. Well, you see one.
If you see one,
yeah.
then you can assume there's
a
thousand
yeah.
more. And that's an interesting subject in itself, as how, once again, the lead in their asses over there at the Agriculture Department, it's radiating out from Hickam Air Force Base in a mulch pile.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and as always, Agriculture Department, thumb up butt and walking around, they know it. Well, we got to be careful. Don't want to alarm public. And then all of a sudden now it's a war.
Right.
You know, it's a panic.
Right.
And they knew about it. And right there now, the piles of mulch, they found the bug, the adult, and knew that in those mulch piles right there at Hickam. And what do they do? Well, you know, mulling and...
You know, sometimes I think they're in an enviable position. That I think with funding, at least, you know, this is the story that we get from them. As funding gets cut, we don't have enough inspectors anymore for, you know, detecting mm-hmm. things coming in from the port. Sometimes I wonder if we're more of a reactionary instead of proactive. And this is one of the problems is that when varroa came in 2007, we were caught off guard.
Mm-hmm.
We had no plans in place for, you know, how to manage this thing because I don't think that people really thought this thing would ever get here. And the same was true with small hive beetle. But with varroa showing up in 2007 and really wreaking havoc on the beekeeping mm-hmm. industry in Hawaii,
mm-hmm.
there should have been a plan in place to handle the small hive beetle or tracheal mites or something else.
Right.
The small hive beetle spread from the Big Island to here through the movement of hives. Now, there are people that will tell you, no, it was because fruit was shipped from the Big Island to Kunia. And I go, well, you know, Kunia produces we're not buying stuff and having it arrive in Cunia.
Right.
You know, Cunia is probably...
They're producing food.
Producing food.
Yeah.
But what they did do was they moved hives from the Big Island to Oahu in the Cunia area.
Mm-hmm.
And then after discovering the small hive beetle in the Big Island, it wasn't long after that that we discovered them, you know, in my hives out in Eva.
Mm-hmm.
And then watching them radiating out from... You know, from that area, and just sweeping islands. Like, yeah. I didn't know a beetle could move that fast.
Yeah. I think historically, I've observed the problem that I've noted. It's just that the agency responsible doesn't take full responsibility. We say they don't have enough money, but I look at the recent coverage on the Cokie frog. Now, let's face it, Cokies have been on this island for a while, but all of a sudden, you see, there's 9 found here. They knew this all the time. But why don't they come out and tell us that there is a list of nurseries or plant dealers don't deal with them because they have frogs in their plants. You know, isolate them. They won't do that. So instead, they run ahead and stand in before the camera and say, oh, we have it. It becomes a game of sort when they need complete overhauling of policy because you have the Agriculture Department managing alien species and controlling alien species. Who do you think is going to get the most strongest voice? The guy with 1,000 plants about to ship to Oahu from Big Island? Or the thought of, well, I got to be careful, the frogs are going to come, or the hive beetle. It's money. And unless the Agriculture Department stand up and own up to the fact that they have a responsibility that's conflicting, and they find themselves in predicaments that silence before any action, and then when the public finally notice you hear creak, 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 or loud singing, now all of a sudden, so the hive beetle, when you took me to the few colonies out there, I'm thinking, how did this happen? I mean, hives just practically decimated, right? I think it could have been avoided.
That's a good question, and I don't think we'll ever really know mm-hmm. the answer to it. I think that in the case of Varroa, there's other things waiting on the mainland that we don't have yet, like tracheal mites.
Oh,
it's only a matter of time before it does show up here. And there's a couple of avenues, I think, where this will happen. We have laws that prevent us from bringing bees from the mainland. It's possible that maybe the small hive beetle arrived because somebody thought that they wanted a varroa-resistant queen.
Mm-hmm.
And so got a buddy on the mainland to put her in a, you know, overnight envelope and, you know, ship her here. We'll never really know how the small hive beetle got here. We'll really never know how Varroa got here. There's so many vectors. That,
right.
but the thing that I find amazing is that I still have people come up to me that aren't even aware the small hive beetle's a significant problem. When the Varroa hit in 2007, we had a lot of media coverage.
Mm-hmm.
The legislature moved, I think, $675,000 into
right.
Department of Ag's, you know, budget to manage it. But there was no money put in the next year's budget or
right.
the year after. We have a state apiarist now who is working to do something.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not 100% sure what you know, what the role is. If I could, I would attribute some of our spread of things to ignorance on the beekeeper's part, and I have to include
mm-hmm.
myself
mm-hmm.
in that. When the Varroa came in 2007, a month before the state officially identified it, I was looking at a hive out in Eva, and I saw bees with deformed wings, which is caused by a virus that the mites carry,
mm-hmm.
Deformed wing virus. When I looked on the internet to find out what it was, because I really have no resources here to turn to at that time, the great god of the internet says either Varroa mite, and I just laughed and said, we don't have no Varroa mites here. You know, we got 2,500 miles of separation. We're isolated.
Right.
Mite can't make it. Overheated brood. Well, Eva's hot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'll buy the overheated brood. And then a month later, it's like, oh, we have Varroa mite. And then you learn. And when I think back, if I'd have looked, I may have saw them.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what good would that have done? So I think that arming the beekeepers, you know, with more knowledge would help.
Mm-hmm.
Arming, call it maybe the public, you know, for these cokey frogs or rhinoceros
mm-hmm.
beetles
mm-hmm.
or, but really, how do we know what's bad and what's not? And by the way, I live right next to where the little fire ants are at in Waimanalo.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's right next to me.
Mm.
I'm just waiting for them to come over and start infiltrating my hives.
And we have ant problems everywhere. Out on the Mokulus and what have you, potentially the birds. This is the one that sprays the eyes of the birds and
mm-hmm.
what have you. And so all of this, again, though, we should reevaluate the structure, whereas the Department of Agriculture is responsible for enhancing the well-being of agricultural, the business of agriculture. So they also have the responsibility of creating a list and creating rules on what is imported and exported and what have you. There's conflict there. And unless we address that, and we fail to do that, we talk about the alien
right,
species.
Right.
And so that just we want to make a disclaimer that we're not ignorant here. Honeybees are not native to America either. They're alien species.
Right.
So we
right.
don't want to sit here and present that we're
right.
ignorant. But
right.
but again, we're closing down in the last minute or so. Go ahead. You have anything in closing?
I think the most important thing is to get the message out like we do every year. And I really appreciate you giving us this opportunity. Swarms are also beneficial to us as beekeepers, as pollinators. If we're ever going to try to reduce, you know, reliance on the mainland for, you know, some crops and stuff like that, we need healthy bee, you know, population.
Mm-hmm.
It's really important if you see a swarm, call somebody and do it right away. Don't think that they're going to fly off, you know, that they're just there temporarily. Treat them like they're going to be there for the rest of their lives
mm-hmm.
and call somebody. You can call me. Can I give my number out?
258-7296.
You can call 911. I'm sure they're probably not happy with me saying this, but when you call them, tell them police non-emergency and then tell them what, and they have a list of people that they will call. The fire department has a list of people that they will call. Your pest control companies, they know. They don't want to deal with them, but they'll tell you who to call.
Mm-hmm.
And the most important thing you can do is call us right away.
Okay, thank you. But this case last week, it's important to call the fire department because people were stepping in traffic, avoiding that hive. So
right.
don't hesitate. Just call. Please let them stay. Don't spray. You're not going to be a hero if you spray them because you'll never spray them all, and you only serve the purpose of destroying a good hive and let it be. So, Howard, thank you.
Thank you,
I
Carol.
Appreciate it. And Howard's company is Nalo Meli, which is honeybee, at www.nalo-meli.com. And then go see howarethebees.com, and you know, you can learn a lot from Howard here at this, and try to support his business, because driving around for free to respond to the bee is not good. So, Howard, thank you.
Thank you.
Aloha. Sail!
sailors. I'll tell you, lose your happy home.
Stay tuned for the second half of the Carol Cox Show right after the news on KWAI Honolulu.
Well, soon, one more, there'll come to you. Soon, one more, there'll come to you. Soon, one more, there'll
gal, your love is dead. I got a letter this morning. My heart is ringing red. You just say hurry, hurry. I call a gal, your love is dead. Oh, I grabbed up my suitcase, took out down the road. When I got there, she's laying on a cooling board. I grabbed up my suitcase. I said, I took her down the road. I said, but when I got there, she's laying on a cooling board. Well, I walked up right close, looked down in her face. The good old gal got a day, the judgment day. I walked up right close, I said, I looked down in her face. I said, the good old girl got a lay in a judgment day. The back of the 10,000 people standing round the burying ground. I didn't know I loved.
It's time for the Carol Cox Show right here at K108. If you have questions or comments for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080. And now, here's Carol. The following program is brought to you by Carol Cox. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of KWAI staff and management.
Hey, good morning again, and welcome back to the second half of the Carol Cox Show. Again, always glad to walk in here and look out the studio window and see the Poly and the Poly Crossing, and it's just absolutely awesome. And it's not the flatlands of the Delta, and and it's just still awesome. If I could just move a couple of houses to the right and to the left, I could have a complete unobstructed view of the Poly. So maybe one day I'll get some pictures and posts up there again and let you see what the Poly looks like. Anyway, I was going to pick up the subject that I briefly talked about last week, the death penalty and the application of it and the absence of it here. And later on, if you'd like to join in, I'd really like to know some of you younger folks out there that were around in 1957, and tell us how it was. What was it like, if any of you out there that remember that time when we actually banned the death penalty or the capital punishment? But 1944 is the time that we actually saw the stop of the killings by hanging or firing squad or whatever they were doing here. But let me, I spoke last week and I asked, just invited Howard McGinnis, the B-man, to stay with me because, you know, we all got our opinions and want to share with one another. But let me just say that again, just because I'm alarmed or interested and concerned about this subject, doesn't really mean that you have to give a care about it, and I understand that. But these are just overt thoughts on my part, and I'm going to share them with you. But the Guardian, which is a newspaper online, Saturday, March 8th, they wrote a reprinted in the Associated Press in Honolulu. Let me just tell you that their article says Hawaii holds death penalty trial despite having abolished capital punishment. Soldier allegedly murdered daughter on military property. Federal government seeks death sentence for Naeem Williams. Now, this article, and if you look at it, The Guardian, I didn't post it up. I'll try and put a link to it. But this Naeem Williams case, folks, comes from the George Bush era. This pursuit of the death penalty is not something just recently placed up. This is a strategy. And this is something that bothers me. And what happens is that this is 2005, this case started, and we're now listening to the death penalty considerations and whatever, and yet no one's alarmed. And what I'm hearing when I do dare to break the subject with people, I hear, well, it was a little girl, a little child. And what kind of criteria is that? Killing someone, if we're going to go straight across the board and apply the death penalty, I'm never for it personally, but let's have some consistency. So that brings on one other major concern that I have. And last week I mentioned to you that Senator Willis Sparrow, a Democrat, and I understand that the platforms, one of the planks is for the Democratic Party is not capital punishment. So I'd like to ask this basic question. We know that Willis Sparrow is the chairman of the public, committee, public safety and military, actually what it is, it's Willis Sparrow, chairman of the Senate Public Safety Committee. And let me just read you, and you help me if you could later on understand this. Is there a conflict here? Is there something wrong with this? Senator Sparrow, as you know, is going for congressman, and I'm cordial with him. But and actually, just by coincidence, I had suggested, asked that he would come on the show once. But in the interim, I'm researching this subject. This is a topic that was written about in 2010, and the article was written by Mary Versino for the Star Advertiser. The case raises Honolulu Star Advertiser, HST. So it says two inmates could face death penalty in killing. The case raises issues about Hawaii prisoners being held in facilities outside the state. Senator Willis Sparrow, chairman of the Senate Public Safety Committee, said the Nunuha case could prompt more discussion on the implications of shipping Hawaii inmates out of state. As Sparrow added, he wants to learn more about the killing before trying to determine whether the state should stand in the way of the death penalty sentence. Quite frankly, it was a cold-blooded murder, he said. I'm sure you will find people in Hawaii that say they deserve to face the death penalty. And also, I wasn't able to get any specifics, but in one article, he is quoted, Senator Sparrow is quoted now, as saying at least 75% of his constituents in his area that he represents supports the death penalty. I don't know how factual that is, but, that is something that he mentioned. Now, strange enough now, we talk about politics and Democrats, and there are other concerns about death penalty and the capital punishment, that the application of it, and we'll talk about that, the disparity And as you notice, I told you in the entire history of Hawaii's use of the capital punishment, one Caucasian was, and I'll talk about that. And while 24 Hawaiians and 24 Filipinos and on, I'll give more specifics. But what I find interesting is that Governor Lingle, a Republican, opposed the death penalty. And in an article written by Richard Bereka in the on Thursday, January 9th, of the Star Bulletin, or Governor Lingle says she strongly opposes allowing both the death penalty and assisted suicide in Hawaii. However, she is not likely to veto such measure if the legislature shows strong support in passing it. It would depend on how it passed the legislature, but I am very much against it, Lingle is quoted. Lingle said yesterday about the proposal suggested by none other than the Senator Willis Sparrow to reinstate the death penalty. Now, I don't want to be foul-mouthed here, but is there something wrong with this picture? A Republican is saying no, but a Democrat whose party boasts that they're against this kind of thing, and they know of the disparity, and they know the unfair application of the capital punishment and some of the deeper concerns. But Sparrow goes on to say he wants to be able to apply capital punishment for death of a minor who has been sexually assaulted. What about applying it? How did you arrive at it? It would be just minors. That was what's puzzling. Where is the science, or is this thought out? Why just a minor? If someone is violated and raped and murdered or what have you, why not just make it clean if you're going to support? And how did you arrive at that? He also is calling for a law that would impose a death penalty for murder of a minor, regardless of whether a sexual assault occurred. So this is, Lingle goes on to say, I am not for capital punishment, but I haven't seen the bill being proposed. And this is, I'm sorry, not Lingle, this is Colleen Hanabusa. Again, this is the contradiction. Senator Colleen Hanabusa, Judiciary Committee Chairwoman, supports death with dignity, but like Lingle, is opposed to the death penalty. But how is it that our friend Willis Sparrow, who's now running for Congress, she goes on, I'm not for capital punishment, but I haven't seen the bill being proposed. I will wait to read it, said Hanabusa. She promised, however, that her committee would hold hearings on Sparrow's bill. Why would she hold a hearing on Sparrow's bill if it was inconsistent with the platform of the Democratic Party? Or are we just being BS'd by the Democratic Party? What are we dealing with? Are they Democrats? What are they? When we will get into the number of Hawaiians and the disparity and the number of people that were represented. As Sparrow said yesterday in this article that he has not started lining up support for his death penalty bill and acknowledged that it would, quote, be an uphill battle. Sounds like he left us hanging. As Sparrow said, he is pushing the measure because in his district surveys, 75% of his constituents say they support it.
And what would be the demographics of that area?
Right. I don't know. It's frightening and for me, and to know that this thing quietly as an introduction by George Bush administration, the Attorney General, and to see it continue. And that intent is a strategy on the part. And why is it? It's in the federal court. And as I raise the issue, if we start off wrong, in my opinion, as I said to you earlier, the gentleman Cosby murders the prostitute or escort, and Master Sergeant Nathaniel Cosby. And again, no talk of the death penalty. Now, I don't know if it's because it didn't occur on federal property, because that's one of the elements they're citing in this. But a Honolulu courtroom, I'm reading from this, The Guardian. A Honolulu courtroom is set to become the scene of a death penalty trial, even though Hawaii abolished the capital punishment in 1957. It is rare for the government to seek death penalty in a state that does not allow it. Only 7 of 59 inmates currently on death row, federal death row, are from the states that did not have the death penalty at the time the sentence was imposed, according to Death Penalty Information Center in Washington. While the Williams case has not received much publicity, the death penalty circumstance give it something to in common with more high-profile cases for federal prosecutors. Quote, giving an example, the Boston Marathon. You have a population in Massachusetts in the city where they're not used to having the death penalty, end quote, said Richard Dieter of the Death Penalty Information Center's executive director. It just makes it a little harder to get these kinds of death sentences. But Kenneth Lawson, associate director of the Hawaii Innocence Project, noted that someone who considers the death penalty immoral can be disqualified from serving on the jury. Quote, how do you get a jury of all your peers when the only ones who can sit on there are those who believe in capital punishment? And that's what you alluded to earlier, Howard. So you got any thoughts on that?
I think my thing was, where do you get a jury of your peers, mm-hmm. you know, on this island? I'm not sure. Does a military trial, is it a jury of your peers being military, mm-hmm. or is it a jury of your peers being drawn from the, the general population?
Mm-hmm.
That I don't know.
Well, my concern, and I'm very vocal about this, and I will state and say the things that others dare not to, and whether right or wrong, but we got away from capital punishment because of the questions that how it was applied, who applied it, and when it was applied, and the disparity and the number of whites that were not prosecuted in such a fashion, and on and on. And not to mention the number of exonerations that are occurring in these projects. Today there's an article in the newspaper about just that, the prosecution and people being exonerated. For example, convictions get a second look. And this is on page A8 in today's paper, Star Advertiser, written by Jennifer Peltz of Associated Press. Prosecutor's office for the past 7 years across the country has put together a staff and teams to review wrongful convictions, and they have agreed to revisit more than 4,900 cases, resulting in 61 convictions tossed so far. False convictions have become a concern. There's 68 exonerations per year in the country. Can we know these facts and tolerate the move toward reinstating the death penalty here in Hawaii?
Well, it goes with the capital punishment is a one-way thing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, once it's been applied, there's no exoneration. So if the system breaks down, if it makes a mistake, that's an unrightable wrong that occurs.
And we see this all the time. And
we're seeing more of it, too, aren't we?
Barry Scheck, he started a foundation with that, the Innocent Project.
Mm-hmm.
But I stand back here in this state and say there's something wrong. Forget the fact that Nyeen Williams is going through this process and that it was initiated in the Bush era and the Bush administration. I ask the question, how can our state senator, with good conscience, sit and chair a committee that should be open to all aspects, but he's committed and advocating for capital punishment. I think we need to revisit that in itself, because that's a clear indicator right there that why we don't need it. It starts to suggest why we should stay far, far away and clear from, because if it's that blatant, then there should be some concern. This article in the Guardian, it goes on, it states that I'm shocked that this case has not received more attention from the public and more attention from those groups in Hawaii that are anti-death penalty. This is a quote from Mr. Silver. There's just something wrong. And one of the things that the article did say, and that I, through my research and finding, first of all, this article, going back to the article, Alberto Gonzalez, the U.S. Attorney General, during President George Bush, made the decision to seek the death penalty against Nyeen Williams. Quote, under Bush administration, the philosophy was the federal death penalty should be spread among all states, all the states. This is being quoted from Mr. Dieter, who was legal observers say it is surprising that the current government continues to seek the death penalty against Williams. So that brings another question. Why is the Obama administration taking up this and allowing this? Where is Eric Holder? We're talking about people being disproportionately incarcerated for marijuana and cocaine and all of that. But here are people with the rope around their neck, literally. And there's still move afoot. These are the contradictions that when I have to say, hey, brah, what the fuck? You know, you're telling me that you don't want them incarcerated for smoking a doobie. But you'll put the rope around his neck as part of the old plan, and you know that it's flawed, and you're speaking to the unfair incarcerations and people are being exonerated. What, you know, powder cocaine and crack cocaine. Could this also be viewed as just another part of that brick in the wall that is bad? But that's what's puzzling about this incident with the Obama administration. I'm seeing these new great gestures, but it seems like he adopted the Jim Crow policies, and I don't understand it. So legal observers say it is surprising that the current government continues to seek the death penalty against Williams. Quote, it's disappointing for the federal government choosing to move forward in a death penalty case in the state so clearly and constantly has rejected that as a form of punishment, said Rick Singh, president of Hawaii Association of Criminal Defense Lawyers. So anyway, the last time the federal death, this is the article in The Guardian, the last time the federal death penalty was approved for a Hawaii case was against Richard, quote, China, end quote, Chong. But before he went to trial in 2000, he agreed to plead guilty to a 1997 drug-related murder and was sentenced to life in prison without possibility of parole. He died of an apparent suicide about 3 months later. Hawaii's history, and this is one of the things that leads me to another concern for me, why I personally wouldn't support this, and I'll get into it. But the article goes on to say, Hawaii's history with capital punishment goes back long before statehood. There were 49 executions in Hawaii dating to 1856, with the last one recorded in 1944. According to the death penalty information. Now, that is contrary to the information that I have, and I recovered this information. This is, I'm referring to Appendix 1 of a legal Hawaiian executions, all crimes of murder in the 19th century. It was written by Joseph Thoreau, and it comes from the main body is a short history of Hawaiian executions. So actually, this Appendix 1, Mr. Thoreau has published, states that the first, number 1, the name, didn't give the name, 1 through 13, probably 1826 to 1841. So the article, not taking issue with it, it states that as far back as 1856, but the hangings were occurring, or capital punishment apparently was occurring, as this document reports. And it states that, and it gives the ethnicity and the date each person was killed or hanged or shot or whatever was used. But it said that it goes all the way to 1944. And 1944, as in 1927, now as what the document says, goes back from 1856 to 19. It was 48 people that were killed or hanged or assassinated, or well, not assassinated, executed. But a total, instead of 48 as the paper reports, this document say there were actually 60. And the total number, they break it down in ethnicity. In that total number of 60 people, one Caucasian was executed, three Puerto Ricans, five Chinese, six Korean, nine Japanese, 24 Hawaiians, 24 Filipinos, and three unknown. So, interesting, the situation with the Caucasian gentleman was an interesting one, in that his name is reported as a Frank Johnson, but the reality is it's a Connolly, and I don't know why, but they only gave the ship's name, and he was molested and killed a young child. But that was it. So the disparity in the application of the death penalty right here in Hawaii raises concern. You know, that's what's happening. And House Bill 706 was passed way back and to get rid of the capital punishment. Any comment?
Was that in 1957?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
And also at Schofield Barracks, it was capital punishment as well. So I don't know if they were talking about the civilian, but the entire process is concerning me.
Flawed,
right from the beginning, right from the onset. And I don't know why the Obama administration is following this while presenting itself as a, I don't know, which would I want my government advocating for me to get stoned or stop someone from stoning me? You know, we got our wheels on this car backwards or something. There's something wrong with this. We're advocating for the death penalty. Well, I guess they're advocating to let us get stoned so that we can deal with the thought of getting electrocuted, prosecuted, executed. I don't know.
If I could ask a question, and that would be, is this legislator raising the issue of death penalty because of the trial that's on now? Mm-hmm. As this is, I don't want to say sensationalism or something like this, but this is a topic that's ongoing right now, and a position on that gets you a lot of media coverage. My question would be, from 1957, when they abolished the death penalty,
mm-hmm.
to the current time, how many times in that period has somebody championed bringing back the death penalty?
Well, the only one that I've physically and documented, and I'm going to do more research and actually going to contact State Senator Espera and ask him, he's the only one that I've been able to find any prominence in position here. And I guess I didn't, when I got to the point and drawing the conclusion or comparing, wait, this is Senator Will Espero, chairman of the Public Safety Committee. you need to have a neutral stance on everything as a chairman of that, because what are you gonna, anybody proposing any bills not to have would never be heard, or introduction of, when you're advocating as chairman, you need to take a neutral position or step down from that position. I hope that I don't get in a predicament where they're talking about putting a rope around my neck, because apparently you're already behind the eight ball. And that's, I don't know. I just can't see we merge out of the era of death penalty.
Well, is there also, is there a public outcry for the death penalty to come back? That's why I was asking about, mm-hmm. Between 1957 and the current thing, how many times have people, broached the subject of bringing back capital punishment? And, what was that driven by? Was that driven by a public outcry?
Mm-hmm.
Is it the population of the state that says we really need to have this form of punishment?
Well, I don't ever recall having a conversation with Mr. Gonzalez, the Attorney General. And it was the Bush administration that instigated this. So I don't know if there was ever even a public forum of discussion. I think that this was a strategy, and that's what's more appalling than anything, is that we allow this practice and the pursuit of it. We should have immediately, the Attorney General should have just immediately, Eric Holder should, and the President should have said, we don't want anything to do with this, in my opinion, because we know, and they know, that a person can get set up or be falsely accused. They know that. That's why they're crawling through the papers now and talking about disparity in punishments and sentences. So why would they? I'm just puzzled by the whole thing, and maybe if I probably one day write a letter to them and ask, how do you arrive at that? But, one interesting note I was looking at the military records online, and you've heard the story of Emmett Till, the young black man that was murdered in Mississippi and dumped in the river. A brother and a brother-in-law killed him, and caused great concern. Anyway, Emmett Till, his father, actually, Louis Till, was also executed while in the military. So the funny part about it is, Stennis, John Stennis, and senators down there, they even, the lowlife they are, actually went, or were, because they're dead now, they actually went and claimed that the young man's mother withheld that information so that it wouldn't look bad on her son. I mean, you see the... But anyway, if you'd like to, go Google Louis Till. I thought this would just be a footnote or a side note. But anyway, I'm going to read a couple things here. And the last person was Adriana Domingo, who was Filipino. And in this article, this document that I was reading from earlier, A Short History of Hawaiian Executions Between 1826 and 1947, Filipinos used to be hanged in Hawaii, the document says, with great regularity, just as the 19th century saw an equal number of Hawaiians hang. Out of 75 documented civilian hangings in Hawaii, 48 have been Filipino and Hawaiian. And I'm sorry, that would be like me going out and advocating, as Will is, that we can't ride on the bus anymore. I mean, I'm being facetious, but I think Will needs to do his homework and understand the implications here that suggest that, and he's also with the military affairs. So I don't know. I would like to ask if he has any communications with the military to see this thing go through as a communications affairs senator, right? Good morning, caller. You have a comment or question?
Yeah, just a quick question. I wonder how many whites committed murder during that period that you're quoting. And during the period, during the Filipinos, that was the area where they had the Filipino camps. And there were a lot of killings on the Filipino camps, as I recall, since I go back to that era.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know how many whites killed or what have you. I really don't know, but... let's put it this way. We know there were killings, and I don't know, Ed, the number. But if they had killings in the camps, again, the issue is, were they capital punishment, and how did we arrive at it? Why weren't they just incarcerated for life or giving a stiff penalty or stiff sentence? Caller, go ahead. Come in a question.
I'm Filipino myself, and so is Willie Asparo, but that's beside the point. I am for the death penalty just because I think it would be a deterrent to the crime. It's out of control now, you know, all of the crime that's happening, not just murders, not just rapes, but, you know, crime in general is just out of control. And I think that if somebody were actually executed or a body part was removed or something like that, I think that would open a lot of criminals' eyes and they would reconsider committing crimes. I think it would be a huge deterrent.
Well, I've always had a solution for that, and I agree to some degree with you. I think that a person like yourself, if you want, you agree with the death penalty, I think we should have a registry that you make a declaration that if I personally commit a crime that rise to the level of capital punishment, then hang me, burn me, or whatever.
Exactly.
And then that's for you. So you sign that paper, and then that way we have control. We won't have a debate. So if you violated the law and violated someone or murdered someone, it's clear. It's like you signing your organs, donating them to them. It's already predisposed. I would suggest that. But if to engage in and support such a practice when dismissing or ignoring the disparity, I mean, and the number of exonerations, is it worth for your needs or satisfy you to just recklessly hang people and then in turn or kill them or execute them? Because once you execute them, where is their right? What if they were falsely accused? What about that?
Well, I understand what you're saying and I respect what you're saying, but whether or not you were falsely accused, I still think it would be a deterrent, because say you were falsely accused and then you were executed, then criminals are still going to go, whoa, wait a minute, whether I do this or not, I'm going to die.
So let me ask you this. What crimes then would you say, where do we start and stop for the crime, type of crime that rise to the level of execution?
Serious crimes, murder, rape. Those two come to mind right away. But, you know, I mean, I just think it's out of control, way out of control. It's been out of control for such a long time, and nobody's afraid of anything anymore. That's the reason why they keep doing what they do, because there's no ramification for what they do.
Mm-hmm.
There's no punishment.
So I would still go back to say, well, if I saw the list of everybody was equally represented, because we see crimes being committed, and I go gravitate back to the disparity in punishment or rock cocaine, crack cocaine. Let's just as an example. And this gentleman, the soldier, just killed the escort of the prostitute, Ivy. Why didn't he get nominated for the death penalty?
Yeah, and you know, I have my own personal feelings about the original case that brought up this discussion, Naeem Williams. But I understand what you're saying. I mean, here's Naeem Williams who was convicted of killing his daughter by abuse, and then here's another guy who didn't even have a relationship with this woman and killed her.
Mm-hmm.
So how come he's not getting the death penalty?
Right. Well, I don't know. But again, it should be an open discussion. But here's my concern. When we find out that it is the George Bush era, and it was introduced, and we have a Democratic government and the president, and they're out fighting for people to get the right to smoke some dope and grow some dope and sell some dope. But they're not moving to speak to the disparities in the application of the death penalty.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry. See, I have to go with that angle and say it's not a debate whether I support it or not. I just look at the mechanics of it and say, how do we arrive here? And we know historically it has been flawed, seriously flawed. So I'm not debating whether we should or shouldn't have it. I'm first saying, why and how do we get to acknowledge the flaws to make sure that if a person is deserving of that, then it should be applied. But how is it that historically the people making those decisions are white?
Right.
So
how do we get there?
You know, how do we get to that point, you
right.
see?
Right, yes.
And so I'm not going to adopt a policy and say, and then push it aside and say, well, crime has increased. It's so high. So because I personally, you want to know what I believe?
Uh-huh.
I believe what rise to the occasion of the death penalty, and this is extreme, is when a politician get in office and lies and violate our rights.
Uh-huh.
That to me is a death penalty because you're impacting a nation of people. Uh-huh. You go beyond the national borders. You are really a criminal because you've defrauded the people. You won their trust and you jeopardize society, its well-being and the stability of society. And I mean, that's an extreme measure, but an individual killing someone, yeah, deal with them and isolate that person.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, a lying governor or a lying president, mm-hmm. a fraudulent attorney general or someone like that, no. You won the trust and you stood there and said. So to me, I really believe this should be capital punishment.
Unfortunately, you know, the thing that you say about, okay, let me just say this. this corruption is mm-hmm. happening not just in the United States, but everywhere, everywhere. You have presidents that lie. You have attorney generals that lie. I mean, even though they take this oath, mm-hmm. they're still lying all over the place. So, anyway.
So, you know, I mean, we got to go back and be fair and understand that it's happening. I mean, right now, for example, I find it so offensive. I see the banks, for example. Now they're talking about putting a cop in the parking lot at each bank. But damn it. I get hit upside the head in broad daylight and
the
cops come by and this is in broad daylight and mm-hmm. they look at you like, well, you know, we got things to do, man. What were you doing out here by yourself? You were alone. You understand? So the thing is, we haven't even spoke to the social economic motors that drive this thing about punishment. If you steal from the king mm-hmm. or you do something of that nature, mm-hmm. you get punished. So, I just think to get to that point, render an opinion that's so extreme,
mm-hmm.
you can't go back and undo it when you find that this person was wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And so, anyway, well, thank you.
Yes, thank you.
Aloha.
Bye-bye.
Good morning, caller. You have a comment or question?
Yeah, in the case of Ivy, the prostitute, mm-hmm. and Naeem Williams' child, I think the circumstances differ. The prostitute put herself at risk in her profession, whereas you got this beautiful little girl who is the daughter of the parents, and he kills her. Now, I think there's a big difference in adjudication of the death penalty regarding these cases. And most death penalties are adjudicated based on the seriousness of the crime and the circumstances. And getting back to Texas, I think Texas has the most death penalties affected. But if I'm not mistaken, most of those who have been executed in the recent time in death penalty were white males. So I don't have the statistics right now. That's all I have to say.
All right. Well, you know, I'm going to go back to Willa Sparrow here. We were talking about the driving force behind it. Honolulu Advertiser, January 11, 2003. Hawaii must say no to death penalty. That's the article. In a letter to the editor this week, Senator Willis Sparrow says he intends to submit legislation in the coming legislative sessions, quote, to impose a death penalty on a criminal who sexually assaults and murders a minor. As far as the prostitute, it's one of the world's oldest occupation, and I don't know if we start giving titles to who we give death penalties based on one's profession, if you murder them. I just think that I hope that many of you out there understand, and I believe it's part of a ploy to, and I hear this over and over, it was a young girl, a young baby. Of course it was. But are we being manipulated? Are we being set up? And I wouldn't want any harm to come to anyone, old or young. And I find it reprehensible that this man would beat his child and that his lady, a girlfriend, would even participate. You had two evil people there. I mean, evil. But again, I'm not willing to just hand off to Gonzalez and Obama and Holder and anybody else who says, let's move forward and hang and execute people. And because, on the other hand, we're over here, we must protect the right of people from going to jail and being submitted to jail for many years for two marijuana joints. You know, we're talking about a judicial system here and the fairness and the equal distribution of that. Death is death, and you can't, what are you going to do, call the family up and go, well, you know, we found out that this person was innocent. And how do you get peers to judge you? I don't know.
Well, one question that comes up when we talk about the little girl is, the system failed her, because surely along the way somebody must have known something.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, you know, why wasn't an outcry, you know, if she had medical attention? What happened to that process where, you know, a doctor should see the signs of abuse and so that it doesn't progress to a point where we have to have the conversation about, do we put this man to death, you know? Mm-hmm. And is the mom just as guilty?
Yeah. And Peter Boy, remember on the Big Island, the kid, young man? Why? And do you, people that are complicit in the death, I mean, the state knew that he was being abused. Do we charge them? I mean, you know, or do we say, no, that's the government? Or do we say, no, that's Mr. Cox, he has a bank here and we'll deal with him a little different? Oh, no, that's Sergeant Nathaniel Cosby. He killed a black lady who's a prostitute. You know, it's funny. This is why I draw my conclusion in part. On one hand, they tell you, oh, it was a nice young baby, a child. But over here, quickly to tell you it was a prostitute. That's a human being.
It's a human being. And to label him, I think, is wrong. One of the things you brought up earlier was that I think we're starting to pass laws that benefit, call them special interest groups. So when you do say, well, murder is murder. It's the taking of somebody's life.
Mm-hmm.
But it's more of a murder if it's a child,
mm-hmm,
than this lady. I mean, who gives somebody the right to say this lady is not as important as this child? They're both equally important.
And
yet we want to pass laws that say that that this is more of a crime, right, than this is. It boils down to it's murder.
Well, we've become reckless as a society, and honestly, when we're very haphazardly applying rules and laws, and then we stand back and try to make sense of it. If there is one example, doesn't have to be 1,000 or 50 a year, just one, when it says that you were tried by your peers, the evidence was submitted, and then you find out that it was flawed, it was wrong, and it was a lie. How many do you dismiss as being just an accident, or do you become concerned? And what in the ultimate? So we're going to execute this person because we just want to get rid of them and scare the hell out of the rest of them. They won't do it. There's no proof. And it right now, the $250 or $150 for using your cell phone, forget the death penalty.
Right.
It doesn't discourage people. It discourages some.
generating revenues.
Yeah, it's, you know. So, and there were fun to these things. They were really entertaining at one time. They would call things like double headers when they would have two people hang on one day.
Right.
You see, coming along with that, I mean, the government can't control that. But, again, this is just me talking. I don't care one way or the other if people, because I'm not going to commit any crimes. I don't think so. You know, that would rise to that level. But shame on us all, because we are being manipulated in this process. We have a state senator that I don't care. He has a right to believe anything, but something's wrong when you're the committee chair on the public safety and you're out advocating for a death penalty. Where is your objectivity? What laws and legislations will you put in place that will be contrary to what you're advocating? Will you stall? Will you do? What letters are you writing behind the scenes with the military? Because it's a military case. It wasn't a civilian case, because why, if they were so interested, why pass up on Cosby? We got two right there and a couple other crimes, right? If we were interested. Willis Sparrow, state senator, he's advocating. Why didn't he get out with the guy that just shot the people down on Kapahulu, or that side of there, would pull his gun out, and he was just in the news. There are many cases that the state and Willis Sparrow could. I believe it's a ploy on his part, and I believe that he's not being open with us on this whole matter, believe it or not, because he knows a lot more. And the strategy was the George Bush administration, Gonzalez, who then, and the Obama administration to let this go forward, to me, is reasons for just abandoning this whole thought of starting it up again. So anyway, folks, maybe one day we'll be talking about later on this thing at Kalailoa. But just a little, I wanted to rattle the cages and mention some of that was bothering me about this. And we're going to be right back in the predicament we were once before, and then it'll be reading 26 black folks, and I'll lead the top list of the list, and one white again, because I guess from that looking at that application of that law, whites don't commit crimes, that they don't murder people.
We're saving it for, like, being bank presidents and automotive presidents, where we can commit crimes and basically get away with that.
Yeah. But anyway, killing anybody is wrong, and I believe if you kill someone, you should pay dearly and be incarcerated, and that's just my personal belief. And if it's reinstated, I guess we all have to, I guess then we could leave our doors unlocked. And only people who have to worry about then is the mortgage people and the banks, and, you know. But with the death penalty being installed, here's the one thing I've observed. You know, our system has become so strange. You wake up in the morning, the TV stations are showing us a picture, a video, to help Walmart find someone for coming in and stealing a watch, or a can of dog food, or maybe some vienna sausages that they can eat them. This is what our media has become. So, you know, now if we put the death penalty, we scare the hell out of them, and they won't dare violate the law over here, and then we got the police sitting at the banks to make sure the robberies don't occur. But when you call one for your home, you might get a report, or you might get a response. Sounds like an interesting state that we're growing into. But anyway, guys, thank you. We'll see you next week. Aloha. Just
This has been the Carol Cox Show, heard every Sundays at 9 a.m. on K108. Tune in again next week, Sunday at 9 a.m. to the Carol Cox Show on 1080 a.m. KWAI Honolulu.